You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
What's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio, episode number 369. Nice. I'm Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton of LeadingGreenNation.com. Brandon and I are going to be at Wrong Crowd Beer tonight for our Cowboys-Seahawks watch party. Why are we watching the Cowboys and Seahawks? Because we can't really have an Eagles watch party, and we can't really have a watch party on the weekend because we're at the games. So we're doing a little Thursday night thing. By the time you listen to this podcast episode, that event probably will have already happened. So if you were there, good to see you. Thanks for the shots. Thanks for the beers that you're all going to buy me. And if you weren't there, you're dead to me. No, I'm just kidding. It's okay. Wrong Crowd Beer in Westchester, PA. Order online, wrongcrowdbeer.com, or ask for Wrong Crowd Beer wherever you buy your beer. They should have it at your local alcohol store. And if they don't, say, yo, dude, get the Wrong Crowd Beer in here, please. Brandon, got a lot to get to. Going to do a little Eagles 49ers preview. That game might be of a little bit of interest to some people on each coast here. And we'll get to some other news Eagles-wise and around the NFL. How are you doing, buddy?
Jimmy, I'm excited because as of we were recording this, I'm hours away from trying the great food at Wrong Crowd Beer Company as well. I'm very excited for that. Excited for the game this weekend. It is a pretty big game. Excited to talk about that matchup. But before we do, I think we have to get to the news of Thursday coming out not too long before we recorded this podcast. The Eagles released Greg Ward from their practice squad, Jimmy. What is your reaction to... No, the big news for real, jokes aside, the Eagles did announce some roster moves, is that Zach Ertz got cut by the Cardinals and is now potentially eligible to return to Philadelphia. He has to clear waivers, as every player who was cut after the trade deadline has to before they can sign with a new team if they are not claimed.
Spoiler, so, he will. His salary is over $8 million. He's going to clear waivers. Nobody's picking him up at that number or anything close to it.
Yeah, but I think they only have to pay like $2 million left this year.
Uh-oh.
What?
I just got a text from Seamus.
Uh-oh.
Saying, writing Monday Night Flex thing real quick.
Uh-oh.
Oh, this is bad. This is what Eagles. What this probably means is that Eagles Seahawks probably got flexed to Monday Night Football, which we were all kind of anticipating happening in the locker room yesterday. Us media types.
Yeah.
He just replied, Seattle game is now Monday Night Football. Awful. Brandon, I have a flight going out there on Friday. I was going to take the red eye back after the game on Sunday. I was going to like walk around Seattle all day on Saturday. Those plans are now effed. I got to change all my flights and hotels now. And night games are just the worst.
It's been a brutal season in terms of the night games. So this is a very sports reportery thing to complain about, to be clear. So sorry for that. But it's not only us, Jimmy. I was talking to someone, an Eagles fan, recently, last week, who was doing some work on my car. And he didn't know... Like, you know, he doesn't know I cover the Eagles or anything. And he was bringing up the late games. I've been a bear for him, just as a fan.
Yeah.
So it's not just us. Man, that's the third Monday night game this year, too, because they played against, well, who'd they play early in the season?
The Vikings.
Oh, the Bucks.
I think
the
were Bucks. Monday night.
That was, Vikings were Thursday night.
Oh, right.
Bucks were Monday night. And then they just played the Chiefs, obviously, on Monday night. So now they have a third Monday night. And then this is new, by the way. New this season, teams can be flexed into Monday night, unlike before. So
sucks.
There you go. In any case.
It's actually good for the Eagles, I think, because, I mean, they have the road game in Dallas on a Sunday. They got to fly back from that, and they're going to have to fly right back out to Seattle. At least the extra day gives them a little time to regroup from a tough road schedule. And then the week after the Seattle game,
they play on Monday again.
It's on a Monday. Yeah. It's not a Monday night game. It's Monday afternoon. Still. It's on Christmas. So, but I think this will actually be welcomed, this change. This will be welcomed by the Eagles, I think, after this, you know, insane stretch of their schedule, just difficulty wise.
This has to be the Eagles season with the least Sunday games ever, right?
Right. Well, we only had the 2 1 o'clock games, and they were both Commanders games. And then we'll have one later against the Cardinals, I think, is a 1 o'clock game. But yeah, other than that, they've all been either late afternoon games or primetime games. The Eagles have gotten a ton of exposure nationally so far this year. And I think that's why there's a lot of kind of hatred towards them.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. I'm trying to message the BGN staff to get this covered on our end of things. But I want to get back to Ertz because Ertz is you know, a big topic of conversation. Really annoying complaint. The complaint is annoying. Really annoying. I have a complaint that I am annoyed today because all this news keeps happening when I'm podcasting, not when I happen to be free to write.
Right.
So that's annoying. Anyway, including the Zach Ertz news, because I was doing a preview podcast with our good friend Rob Stats Guerrera on the Gold Standard Network. So you can check out my conversation with him on his feed about this matchup. But what do you make of Zach Ertz getting cut, Jimmy? You said you don't think anyone's going to claim him. Now, again, it's only, I think, like $2.5 million about for
it. Oh, is it? I thought it was $8 million.
Well, that's his $8 million is his salary this year, but because, you know,
because they already played so many games. Yeah
we're 12 weeks through the season,
right?
Or 13 weeks through the season, that's a large portion of that, over half, has been paid.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The Ravens have been mentioned as a possible team that could claim him. You know, they lost Mark Andrews, so that's something to keep on the radar. The Eagles wouldn't claim him, right? Because there's no point. Because you can just sign him. Because you're
They're the last team in the waiver order. Yeah, right.
So you wouldn't claim his salary. You would just let him go unclaimed at that point and then renegotiate a contract with him.
Yeah.
And especially because you have a relationship with this player.
Yeah, if he wants to come back and play for you, great. And if not, then if he doesn't want to be here, then you don't want him anyway.
Right. But I think it would be really nice to get him back because Dallas Goedert seems like he might be able to play in week 14. That seems to be the case. Doesn't look like he's going to be able to play against the 49ers. Grant Calcaterra looks like he's going to miss another game at least. He's been dealing with an ankle issue. So that really just leaves you with Jack Stoll, Albert O, and last week they elevated Noah Tongeiai to be the third tight end from the practice squad. So
right.
It would be nice to have Zach Ertz.
Well, he's better. I mean, Grant Calcaterra and Albert O are more receiver-oriented than they are blocker-oriented.
Theoretically.
Zach Ertz is better than either of those guys. Right, neither of them have really done anything much of anything at all as receivers in the NFL. Zach Ertz is very clearly better than those two guys, even at this stage of his career. And certainly better than Noah Tongeiai. So, yeah, I mean, is he an upgrade? Sure. And if he wants to come back and, you know, play for basically whatever it would, you know, offset the, you know, his salary with the Cardinals, it's just a small amount of money. Yeah. Why not bring him in? I don't think this is like a game changer of a move to bring him in or anything like that. But, you know, he does give you another competent hands receiver who knows how to run a route. Isn't going to run by anyone at this stage of his career. Was never a tackle breaker at any point in his career. Was never really a great blocker. Got better at that as his career went on, but was never really great at that at any point. But yeah, he's certainly better than Jack Stoll has his role. Like, he'll still play even if you sign Zach Ertz, and probably would still be the number two. But, you know, does Ertz want to come in and play that kind of role as like a number three type of tight end? I don't know. So there might be better fits for him elsewhere in the league. But if he does want to come back to Philly, I think the Eagles would certainly welcome him.
Yeah, I think they could use him. And I think it's a great move for vibes. I think, you know, Zach Ertz is a great addition back into the locker room. It feels like a little bit of like destiny, maybe. You know, it's like, okay, Zach Ertz is back. Like, maybe this is because it's funny. I remember you talking about this earlier this year/last year, like, he, you know, he asked out, understandably so at the time in 2021, but then probably regretted that because of how the Eagles got back quickly and the Cardinals have been clearly a disaster. So it kind of would be nice for him to come back home, maybe get another ring potentially. That could be a very fun thing. And again, it's not just the vibe of it all. It's actually they legitimately can use him. And I do think at this point in his career and being able to return, the cost of being able to return to the team that you love the most and the market you love the most, being like you have to take lesser of a role, I think he might be willing to be on board with that. Like that's a trade-off I think he would take, at least at this point, especially because it's not even like the rest of your career. It could just be this year. Like he could, you know, he could come back this year with the idea that he'll be able to go to another team potentially if he wants to and have a bigger role next year.
All I can think about right now is changing my Seattle flights.
I'm sorry, Jimmy. It's tough. Tough news to break at the start of the show here is you have to deal with that now.
Oh, man.
Elsewhere in Eagles news, we should mention that Darius Leonard slash Shaq Leonard slash Shaquille Leonard is reportedly waiting to make a decision after visiting the Eagles and Cowboys this week over the weekend. It's a weird phrasing for the timeline. Like, when's he going to make the decision? Over the weekend. Okay, when? Like Saturday, the day before the games, or during the games on Sunday? It seems like he would make the decision after the games. Like, wouldn't he want to see how things go potentially? Because I don't think his decision is solely coming down to this, but if the Cowboys somehow end up losing to the Seahawks and the Eagles beat the 49ers, I mean, how is that even a decision? Like, wouldn't you want to sign with the team at that point that is clearly in the driver's seat to get the one seed? I don't think the Eagles, like, I don't think Shaq Leonard is going to make or break their season, to be clear, but they could really use him because Zach Cunningham is reportedly going to miss the 49ers game, and that's not great because the Eagles only two linebackers on the roster are Nicholas Morrow and Christian Ellis prior to now signing Ben Van Sumeren off the practice squad and having him available, but not like a guy that they're going to trust to play on defense as much as he's a break glass in case of emergency option for them there and playing on special teams. So and in addition to putting Ben Van Sumeren on the roster, they also brought Josiah Scott, who they had cut, back on the practice squad. They waived Greg Ward from the practice squad, which is a little curious. And they also added Cam Sims, who used to be on the Commanders, to the practice squad.
Commanders fans love that guy at one point in his career. He's like 6'5".
I like that guy. He's made some interesting catches.
Mm-hmm. Big player at 6'5". So
big man.
The Eagles are super thin at linebacker, obviously, now with Zach Cunningham likely to miss potentially multiple games, the way that Jeff McClain sort of worded a tweet in regard to that. Like, it's a hamstring injury, and he's almost certainly going to miss this game on Sunday against the Niners. But it sounds like it might be a little more than that. So he's been their best linebacker this year, too. So not great. Yeah. Like, kind of an under-the-radar big loss if he's going to be – I mean, it's going to be a big loss this Sunday. And potentially, you know, even worse if he can't play against Dallas. And a little weird that, like, Shaq Leonard doesn't want to make a decision until the weekend. Like, why? I get that it's not that life-changing a decision, because wherever you sign, you're probably only going to be there for you know, the end of the season. So it's like a couple months. And then you're going to be a free agent, and you can sign again wherever you want. But now at this point, you're going to, you know, that's when, you know, money becomes involved, where in this case it's not. Whoever he's going to sign with would probably prefer to get him in as soon as possible. Right. So I don't know, whatever, he can do whatever he wants. He was cut and he's a good player, and he can, you know, he certainly has the right to take his time, but from the Eagles' perspective, maybe a little frustrating on their end.
I agree. Anything else in the news realm that you care to talk about?
Well, the one thing we should mention too is, I guess we already got to this in the last episode, but since we talked about how Deebo Samuel, you know, during the offseason called James Bradbury trash, and then was asked if he still felt that way, and he said, basically doubled down on that statement, said, I don't regret anything I said. Since then, James Bradbury spoke with the media and as expected, takes, because he's a good dude, and he's smart and he's classy, took the high road, just, you know, did not really want to say anything negative about Deebo Samuel or anyone else. I think
he
may
have wanted to,
you know, what's that?
He may have wanted to, but he didn't do it.
Yeah, he didn't. And, you know, as you know, we all know, after the Super Bowl, after he had that holding call on him, took accountability for that in the locker room after the game, he said, basically, I held him, you know, kind of did also note that it wasn't necessarily called that way the whole game, but, you know, did acknowledge that he held a guy and, you know, owned it. So, you know, James Bradbury, the person, the player, I think he's been a great addition for the Eagles, and it'd be pretty cool to see him have a good game on Sunday here against the 49ers.
Imagine, yeah, game ceiling pick or something. Like, imagine how stupid you would feel if you're Deebo Samuel. Like, right. How could you possibly feel worse at that point? Like, there's no way for you to feel worse if that happened. So, I think that's fair. Last thing I'll say before we take a break is Jake Elliott, special teams player of the week for the third time this season. He's the first player to win special teams player of the week three times in a season since Daniel Carlson did that in 2021. Daniel Carlson was second team all pro that year.
Okay.
And obviously behind Justin Tucker. Yeah. So, like, you know, if Justin Tucker didn't exist, he could have very well been first team all pro. So that's something to keep in mind when it comes to the all pro team and Pro Bowl honors and stuff. I think Jake is well on his way for that kind of stuff, as he should be. But let's take a break, Jimmy, because we have a lot to say about this Eagles 49ers matchup, and we'll get into it in a loaded second segment here on BGN Radio. We will be
back after this.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Back here on BGN Radio, which, in addition to Wrong Crowd Beer Company, is also brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. How do you like these four letter sponsors, Jimmy? You got Wrong Crowd Beer Company, you got Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, and then you have Kristen Roach Realtors. Boom.
I never thought of that.
I kind of threw the of in there. I kind of disregarded that, but whatever. The keywords, it's four, and we love the synergy. We love our sponsors. Check out Righteous Felon Craft Jerky by going to righteousfelon.com and using discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. Jimmy, if there was ever a time for the Eagles to load up on their Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, which they have available at the NovaCare Complex Fueling Station right outside of where the Eagles do their lifting in the locker room and where they go into the locker room there, it's this game. This is a game to load up on the Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. So hopefully the Eagles do that. The Eagles themselves, if they want to, can go to righteousfelon.com and use discount code BGN15 for 15% off their order of the finest meat snacks in the land. So go do it, or else you're a 49ers fan. Okay.
Little known fact, Brandon, Jalen Hurts squats 600 pounds. Actually, that's a very well-known fact. But the little known fact is that after he eats Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, he can squat 601 pounds.
Wow. I would like to see him. It would be, you'd obviously have to get him involved, but I think we need to see Jalen Hurts squatting 600 pounds of Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. I think that'd be pretty interesting to see.
Sure.
I'm sure he will not be on board for that. In any case, Jimmy,
he has better things to do at this time, is what you're saying.
He's a busy man.
Yeah.
Plenty of other sponsors, but none of them are as good as Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. Jimmy, Eagles, 49ers, huge matchup. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, well, the 49ers, I think they're not that complicated of a team, really. They run a lot of that motion stuff and the eye candy, and that, I guess, you know, makes them seem complicated. But ultimately, what they want to do is run the football. Like, they're a very old school team in that way. And they're actually they have the second highest run play percentage in the NFL. So they're running it on 50.5% of their plays. There's only one team that runs it more than them or more often than them, and that's the Baltimore Ravens. The other three in the top five are the Falcons, the Bears, and the Eagles. And what do those four teams have in common, the Ravens, Falcons, Bears, and Eagles? They all have quarterbacks that can make plays with their legs and, you know, have their share of rushing attempts. 49ers do not have that. Like, Brock Purdy can, you know, move around a little bit. He's not going to hurt you with his legs. He can escape pressure and that kind of thing, but he's not really going to contribute to rushing game numbers. So they are a pure give the ball to the running back kind of team. And Christian McCaffrey leads the NFL in rushing with 939 yards. He on 193 carries, so he's averaging 4.9 yards per carry. He's got 11 rushing touchdowns. He's also got 48 catches for 389 and 5 touchdowns. He is on pace for, what do we have here? I think 379, if I recall correctly, touches this season. So he gets the ball a boatload. And it's kind of funny to me that, like, Brock Purdy has sort of, quote-unquote, entered the MVP conversation. Okay, yeah, like, you look at Brock Purdy's numbers and they're very, very good, but he is not even close to being the most valuable player on his own offense. It is very clearly Christian McCaffrey. Their offense runs through him. When he's going, their offense is going. When their offense is going, their defense feeds off that. They get leads and they just pummel teams when they're playing at their best. When they don't get their running game going, they kind of get away from it. So their three losses, when they had three losses in a row, at Browns, McCaffrey had 11 carries, 41 yards. At Vikings, 15 carries, 45 yards. Bengals at home, only 12 carries, 54 yards. So it all starts and ends there for me. Like, and we'll talk a lot more about these matchups as, you know, as the podcast continues here. But for me, stopping the 49ers rushing attack is first and foremost. If they can't do that, could be a long afternoon. And of course, the Eagles have I think they're the number three run defense in the NFL now. After this last Bills game, Josh Allen ran for a ton of yards, and the Bills as an offense ran for a lot of yards. So the running backs didn't do all that much, but they kind of got knocked out. I think they were the number one run defense in the NFL last week. They certainly were for the better part of the season. So that'll be a great matchup. It's strength on strength, the 49ers rushing attack against the Eagles rush defense. But if they can't stop the run, going to be a long day.
The 49ers, you know, that's their script. They're good at playing from ahead. They want to get a lead and then continue to just pound the rock and play from ahead. And you basically can't beat them, or it's very hard to beat them when they're playing their brand of football like that. So absolutely stopping the run going to be critical in this one. And it's weird because, you know, the Eagles have had like a top ranked defense pretty much the whole season when it comes to stoppping the run, but they've been a little bit more gettable there recently. You know, the Chiefs had success there, and even the Bills, who aren't like a great rushing team, had some success there. Some of that was Josh Allen, but some of that, especially late in the game after Zach Cunningham went down and Fletcher Cox was out and players who will be missing against the 49ers this week, that's a concern. On the plus side, you do get Milton Williams back, it seems like. So that's a good thing for the run defense. He's a really good run defender.
Yep.
That helps a little bit. But, you know, even Jordan Davis is limited on the injury report, so don't love seeing that. I don't know. I don't like my confidence level and their ability to stop the run. I'm not totally sure how I feel about that because of how they've been a little bit more vulnerable in that regard lately. But if they are able to do that, then I feel really good about their chances, because if you're asking Brock Purdy to drop back and throw the ball like 40 plus times in this game, Eagles are winning this game. They absolutely are. And I'm not saying Brock Purdy sucks, but I just don't think he's really built to win in a volume passing game like that. And I also think you're giving the Eagles pass rush a lot of opportunities to win against that 49ers offensive line, if that's the case in that scenario. So, and also, I will say, if there's ever been a time for the Jonathan Gannon approach in 2023, could be in this game. I just got off that 49ers Eagles preview podcast I did, I mentioned, with my good friend Rob Stats Carrera. What he said about the 49ers offense is that it's kind of like a well-oiled machine. He compared it to a clock in terms of when all the pieces are going, it's, you know, it's operating smoothly, it's perfect. But sometimes, like, if they have a penalty on a drive, they're done. Like, as soon as they get knocked off schedule, they're just done. And that kind of, it's interesting because that kind of speaks to the team at large in terms of, I said, even on the Bills recap show, if you punch this team in the mouth, they don't really have like a lot of, I think, resolve. Mm-hmm. And you kind of, or at least they're more mortal. I'm not saying they're all of a sudden frauds, but they're a lot more mortal. If you can disrupt them, if you can knock this team off a little bit. And the Eagles did do that successfully against a similar style of a team, I would say, against the Dolphins,
yep.
Who obviously employ former 49ers offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel.
Yep.
And the Dolphins were really quick to get the ball out. Tua had the fastest time to throw in the league on average. And the Eagles were able to disrupt that. So I do think there is reason to be encouraged between that Dolphins game and obviously the Rams game as well, given the familiarity with Shanahan and McVay and that kind of that pre-snap motion stuff, that the Eagles can go into this. And it just comes down to execution, which is the game, being able to stop right. The run. But
yeah,
I do, on paper, I like the Eagles matchups.
Yeah, they get that run game going, and then everything feeds off that. So that's when they start getting their play action going. That's when they start getting their boot action game going. And it just completely throws off opposing pass rushes. And like Stats Guerrero said, like it all starts there, and then it becomes just a bitch of an offense to defend once they get their run game working. And in addition to, you know, just stopping the run, another key factor in this game is tackling in the secondary too, after they complete passes, because obviously, you know, this team is well known for, you know, kind of having yards after catch monsters in their offense. And McCaffrey's part of that. George Kittle, maybe the best tight end in the NFL, along with Travis Kelce, for getting, you know, yards after the catch. Deebo Samuel sort of made his career off of that. Brandon Ayuk, sort of under the radar, great receiver so far this year. And he's, you know, been really good getting yards after the catch over his career. So, you know, the Eagles linebackers and their defensive backs, they got to get those guys to the ground, like as soon as they can after the catch, and not allow good Niners plays in the passing game to become great ones, because that's how they kill you with mm-hmm. big plays on, you know, just passes in the short to intermediate areas of the field. Might go for, you know, 10 to 12 yards, but then they wind up being 30 to 40 yard gains because they're just so good at you know, breaking tackles and running away from defenders. So in addition to just tackling in the run game, getting Christian McCaffrey to the ground, you know, beating blocks and doing fundamental things like that, they also just got to really tackle well in the secondary as well. So I'd actually looked up, you know, yards after the catch league wide in the NFL. And to my surprise, Niners were only ninth in yards after the catch as an offense, which seems surprisingly low. I mean, still, you know, top third of the league, of course, almost top quarter of the league. But the top five teams in the NFL in yards after catch, Chiefs, Commanders, Bills, Dolphins, and Vikings. Mm-hmm. What do they all have in common?
They all played the Eagles.
So I thought that was interesting. Like all the best teams in the league at getting yards after the catch. You know, the Eagles have already played them. So the Eagles already played a lot of teams that are great at that. And, you know, as you mentioned, they already played the Rams and Dolphins, which both have very similar style offenses as these 49ers. And I think particularly, you know, you mentioned the Dolphins. I think, you know, a big part of their game plan was to take away the first read for yes. Tua. And, you know, I mean, that's the reason why Tua gets the ball out as quickly as he does, 2.36 you know, seconds, I think, on average. He leads the league in getting out the ball, getting the ball out quickly. They wanted to take away his first read, make him get to a second and third progression, slow down that timing, and then hopefully get home at some point. So I think you're going to see a similar thing with the Eagles defense on the back end when they get Brock Purdy into long downs and distances. But again, you got to tackle on the run game, and you got to tackle on the passing game once they complete passes, or this team's going to kill you.
It's funny because I got a question from Niners Nation, and I'm not trying to throw them under the bus, but the perception of the Eagles pass rush, at least from this one writer, was that the Eagles pass rush like isn't as good this year. It's fallen off a little bit. And it might seem that way, like anecdotally from a standpoint of, you know, they were so good last year. We all said like the Eagles pass rush possibly can't be as good this year. Just not even because it's going to be bad, just because it was so great that even if it's still really good in 2023, it's just hard to be as good as it was again. Jimmy, do you know how many sacks the Eagles have in 11 games this year?
I don't offhand know. Probably between like 35 and 40, right?
It's 32.
32? Do you know how many
sacks they had in 11 games last year?
33.
It's 32. It's the same exact amount. And let's qualify that with the past 2 weeks, the Eagles have been robbed of very obvious sacks against Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen with the intentional grounding. Obviously, that probably happened at some points last year, too. But still, my point is, like, okay, if those are sacks, the Eagles have more sacks at this point this year than they did last year. So that pass rush is still very much fearsome. And as I've stressed throughout the season, it's not just quantity of sacks, it's quality of sacks. And they have very high quality sacks when it comes to late game is on the line and the Eagles pass rush comes through and closes it out. It's happened obviously with Hassan Reddick multiple times, Josh Sweat as well. Brandon Graham has been making these end of game sacks that the offense, again, hasn't always been able to take advantage of, but he's still putting them in the position to end games. So I really like this Eagles defensive line going up against this 49ers offensive line, which, you know, Trent Williams is obviously elite, excellent. You're really not going to be able to win against him very often. Mm-hmm. And I think I would like to see Hassan Reddick and Sweat kind of flip like they've been doing at times in games, just because I don't want, like, because I think you should give Josh Sweat some chances to go up against the 49ers less than inspiring right tackle than just having to be lined up solely with Trent Williams all game, and just to give him a different look, you know, a different kind of rusher. Cause, you know, Reddick and Sweat aren't the exact same kind of edge rusher, I would say. You know, Reddick is a little bit more like craftier and like slippery going up against like a massive guy like Trent Williams. Could be interested to see how that goes. But I like this Eagles defensive line against this 49ers offensive line, especially because, and shout out to BGN's own Shane Half for this. He had some good numbers about how, like, oh, the Eagles pass rush only had 2 sacks the past 2 weeks. Again, not counting the intentional grounding cowardice from those quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But they were pressuring Mahomes and Allen at very high rates. It's just that those guys are incredibly good at not getting sacked because they're elite quarterbacks who can, I mean, in Josh Allen's case, the Eagles had him dead to rights on multiple times, and he just broke tackles or got the ball out, was able to hang on. So with Brock Purdy, you mentioned he has some escapability, but it's not the same level, certainly, as Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. And if they can get near him, then they can get him down, and I like their chances of doing that.
Yeah, from left to right, it's Trent Williams. Aaron Banks is the left guard. Jake Brendel is the center. Spencer Burford stinks, right guard. And Colton McKivitz.
Burford was limited in practice. He missed the last game.
Yeah, so if he doesn't play, it'll be, oh man, the guy the Giants signed last year. He came from Buffalo. John Feliciano. I think they call him Mongo, if I recall correctly. Okay. Something like
that's,
that.
I thought that was the name for the listeners of Mike Francesca's program.
I don't know.
Wasn't that?
Anyway, John Feliciano stinks too. But I think the Eagles would rather see Burford because he's particularly bad in pass pro. But if I'm the 49ers, my biggest concern is Colton McKivitz against, I mean, take your pick, whether it's just Hassan Reddick all day or whether they do kind of flip-flop and make McKivitz and Williams see a little bit of both of those guys. Because McKivitz, fifth-round pick in 2020, starting full-time for the first time in his career this year. Last week we talked about the Bills offensive line and how Spencer Brown was their right tackle and had a very impressive spider chart in terms of his pure athleticism, his numbers from the combine back in the day. Well, Colton McKivitz is the opposite of that. Like, this guy will never be confused for an elite athlete. So I actually was curious to look at some of the sacks that he gave up this year. And man, he struggles with speed. TJ Watt got him on 3 speed rushes week one. Gardeck, the smaller guy from the Cardinals, beat him badly on a speed rush. There's another speed rush by, I forget who it was. Anyway, he's just getting killed on these speed rushes. So, like, it's, I think he can handle, you know, some power to some degree. You know, maybe a better matchup for a guy like, you know, against a guy like Brandon Graham. But if he's got to face off against Hassan Reddick and or Josh Sweat all day, it's a really bad matchup for him. And I think it's a bad matchup across the board for this 49ers offensive line against this Eagles. This is the biggest weakness on either of these two rosters. So the 49ers offensive line is the biggest weakness between these two teams.
You can maybe saw it. manifest in the last game they played against each other.
Yeah, right, right. We saw the Eagles just beat the living crap out of them up front, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. I feel
like people aren't talking about that a lot. Like, the 49ers are favorite in this game. I'm not saying that they're bad right. or trash, but like we're just glossing over that part.
Yeah. I mean, you could maybe make the argument that like the Eagles linebackers are the biggest weakness, and there's probably a pretty good argument for that. But I mean, they just don't matter as much as the offensive line. So like in terms of, you know, the skill of players at a certain positional group and the importance of that positional group, this is the biggest, you know, concern area for either of these two teams is the 49ers offensive line. And, you know, again, the Eagles can't stop the run. They're going to be in big trouble. But if they can, they can get the 49ers in the obvious, you know, passing downs and distances. They can really feast on this offensive line, in my opinion. And I think that the sack numbers for the 49ers, that they've only given up like 21 so far this year. So, you know, they Brock Purdy does get the ball out, but he can be forced into bad mistakes as he was in those three losses to the Browns, Vikings, and who was the other one?
Browns, the Vikings, and the Bengals, right?
Bengals, yes. Their pass rush has forced him into a number of mistakes where he probably should have just eaten it and instead, you know, chucked it up and things got picked.
Well, that too. And again, we talked about the game script of it all. You have to look at, you know, those sacks on compared to the percentage of passing plays. Like the 49ers are running the ball. They're not going to have as many sacks because they're not throwing the ball because they're up in these games. So once they have to, if you can make them throw the ball, you're going to have more opportunity for those. So I think those numbers look a little bit better than they would. Anything else on this 49ers offense?
The other thing I'll note too, just on the point that you made earlier about the Niners Nation point that their pass rush isn't as good as it was a year ago. Other teams are game planning for that now. So like, you know, you mentioned like halfway through the season or at this point in the season last year, they had 32 sacks. They were on an absolute tear to close the season. Well, I mean, they're probably not going to go on that kind of tear this year because, again, so many teams are now aware of how good they are. But when you look like player by player, like Hassan Reddick isn't any worse this year than he was last year. Josh Sweat isn't any worse this year than he was last year.
He might be better than he was last year.
You're right. Both of those guys, I think, are better than they were a year ago. BG might be a little worse because he's older.
He's heating up, though.
I don't think there's a downgrade from Hargrave to Jalen Carter. I think Fletcher Cox is playing some good football so far this year. And then Milton Williams, I think, has taken a step forward, too. Yeah. So when you just look at personnel-wise, they're not worse than they were a year ago.
Jordan Davis, I don't know if you mentioned
him. For sure, I didn't mention him, yeah. But he's given them something in the pass rush, too.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Okay. Why don't you tell me quickly about Christian Rhodes of Roto-Rooters, and we'll continue with the matchups if you're not distracted by looking at whatever you just saw.
I thought she was walking up the lawn right now, but she wasn't. 856-906-9295 is where you can call or text Christian Rhodes of Roto-Rooters. Again, 856-906-9295 if you are looking to buy or sell your home. Voted on by God as the best realtor in the history of the universe.
What else stands out about this matchup, Jimmy?
So let's just flip it to the other side of the line, I guess, because while the Eagles have a very ferocious, scary, big name pass rush, well, so do the Niners. And I mean, their foursome of Nick Bosa. We all know how good Javon Hargrave is. Eric Armstead on the injury report with a foot injury. So we'll see how that progresses as the week goes along.
I've seen 49ers fans like a little worried about that one.
Yeah. He got hurt in the Seahawks game on Thanksgiving night, if I recall.
He also
right?
had a foot injury last year. I saw Kyle Shanahan didn't really say if it was related to that issue or if it's a new one, but that is something to note.
And then Chase Young, who, of course, they traded for at the deadline for a third round comp pick.
So stupid.
Good job, Commanders. anyway, all four of those guys have at least five sacks this season. Bosa has 8, Chase Young has 6.5, Hargrave has 6, and Armstead has 5. Armstead actually has 4.5 over the last 4 games. So he was quiet on the sack front to start the season, but really kind of gotten hot. More recently, we all saw what happened in the NFC Championship game between Nick Bosa and Lane Johnson. Lane Johnson, of course, missed the Bills game with a groin injury. He seems on track to play this Sunday to be determined if he's full health for that game. Mm-hmm. He certainly wasn't against Nick Bosa when he was dealing with an adductor, a very painful adductor injury, right. Shut him down in pass protection a year ago. And then on the other side, kind of a weird, oddball scenario where Jordan Mailata will be facing off against Young for the third time this season. Young got him for a sack week one, beat him badly, I thought, week four in that game. And then in the rematch, week eight, Mailata, owned that matchup. So, kind of learned from some mistakes in the first matchup. So, those are the two big name matchups, Mailata versus Young and Johnson versus Bosa. And then, of course, the Eagles interior with Dickerson, Kelsey, and Juergens, as good as any in the league. And they'll have their hands full with Hargrave and Armstead. They have some other guys that they'll bring in certain scenarios. But those are the two scary guys in terms of pass rush. This is, again, like I mentioned, strength on strength with the 49ers run game against the Eagles run defense. Well, the Eagles offensive line against the 49ers front four pass rush. Again, that's strength on strength as well.
Okay. Sorry, I just got distracted by an email for a maintenance request that I didn't even request. Distracting. Anyway, the worst graded game by Pro Football Focus last year for Nick Bosa. Can you guess which game that was?
Oh, it has to be the Eagles game, right?
It was the Eagles game in the NFC Championship game. It was one of two games from 2022 entirely where Nick Bosa had zero sacks and zero quarterback hits. Mm-hmm. The other game was against the Vikings. So I guess he was going up against Brian O'Neill, who, also big, athletic,
yep.
Good tackle. Anyway, in 2021, when the Eagles and 49ers played early in the season, guess which game was the second worst game of Nick Bosa's season that year? It was that game, obviously, as I just led you into that. So, yeah, I would say there's some track record here.
I bet that's a common theme with every great edge rusher that plays the Eagles at some point during
of course,
the season.
Right.
That has to face off against Lane Johnson, that is.
Not shocking, and obviously take PFF grades for what they're worth,
yeah.
But it does just further cement the idea that Lane Johnson has gotten the better of this matchup between him and Nick Bosa. So you definitely like to see that. We'll see how much, if at all, he's hampered by injury. But like you said, even if he is, he was hampered last year by injury. Mm-hmm. So that might not be the biggest deal here. We'll see about that. But I thought the Mailata point was good because Chase Young, I think, has had some good reps against him. And that concerns me a little bit there on the left side for sure. Not that Mailata is bad or a weakness, like 49ers reporters wanted to suggest at this time last year, but he is certainly not as good as Lane Johnson.
It was a ridiculous assertion last year. There's one guy I think that was really saying.
I think we all know who that is. Yeah. I think you refer to 49ers reporters, I think you all know who that might be. And if you don't know, good. You don't need to know. But if you know, you definitely do know.
Yeah.
And man, would it also be sweet for the Eagles to win just because it's very funny to see the reactions from that.
That guy needs this win more than the 49ers do.
He really does. But okay,
sorry, I stole that joke from another friend of mine offline.
It's worth it. It's worth bringing up on the pod. But yeah. I'm not saying the Eagles are going to have their way with this 49ers defensive line, because they're not. The 49ers, I'm sure, will have their fair share of wins, in part because Jalen Hurts is going to give them time to get to him. If it's anything like he's been this season, where he is the second slowest time to throw in the NFL at 3.15 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I actually looked up, PFF has a stat where it kind of hands out sack responsibility to certain, players or positions or whatever. And in terms of quarterback percentage of sacks allowed this year, Jalen Hurts has the second highest quarterback percentage of sacks allowed. So, that is part of the drawback to him. Obviously, he can make plays when he holds onto the ball, like he did with the OZ touchdown against the Bills. There's positive that can come out of it. But there are times where I think he's going to not just hold on to the ball for forever and give Nick Bosa and that 49ers offensive or defensive line a chance to get to him. I will say on the Hargrave point, it's been a little bit interesting to follow him from afar. Mm-hmm. He's put up some production. When I was talking to Stats back at the time of the Cowboys 49ers game, Stats was a little frustrated with Hargrave because I don't think he had a lot of production at that point. And I think 49ers kind of caught on early to the fact that while Hargrave can very much be disruptive in the backfield especially as a pass rusher, can be had a little bit because of he's undersized in the running game.
Yeah.
He is not necessarily the best run defender. So that is something for the Eagles to consider. And, you know, if they're missing Armstead or if he's hampered and you have Hargrave there, well, this 49ers defensive line, I don't think is as good. And the defense as a whole statistically is not good at stopping the run as they were last year. They've fallen off a little bit in that regard.
Yeah. And Armstead is also like 6'7" and sub 300 pounds. So he's like a long, sleek type of defensive tackle and like not stout, like, you know, not one of these Jordan Davis types that you can't move. So like you can move both of those guys. I mean, we should probably talk about, you know, the Eagles run game versus the run defense. As long as you mention that, Niners have the number two run defense in the NFL. They're allowing 82 rushing yards per game. Of course, part of that is because they are ahead in so many games. So, you know, a lot of teams aren't rushing against them in the second half, but still very good run defense as it is. And big reason why is because they have two very good run stopping linebackers. Fred Warner is the best linebacker in the NFL, in my opinion. 95 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 interceptions so far this year. Eagles only gained 3.4 yards per carry in the NFC Championship game, although I thought they made some, you know, they had some nice chunk plays in the run game. And they, you know, it, obviously in the second half, everyone in the stadium knew they were running the ball because the 49ers didn't have a quarterback. So the Niners had like, you know, 8-9 guys in the box. The Eagles were still, you know, semi-effective running the ball anyway. But you have Warner and you have Dre Greenlaw at linebacker. So those guys are both fast, physical linebackers. And that's part of the reason why they're good against the run. But yeah, this is a good run defense. I think the Eagles have to do a little bit of both. They have to be able to run the ball in this game. I think actually the team that runs the ball better in this game, hashtag analysis, you know, is probably going to be in a better position to win. Again, this just goes back to like, if the Eagles can't stop the 49ers run game, then they're going to be, you know, it's going to be really difficult to beat this team, but they also have to be able to run it as well. And, you know, they've gotten better production out of DeAndre Swift over the last 2 weeks after he kind of had like a month where, I mean, not just DeAndre Swift, but the Eagles run game in general kind of went into, I don't know if you'd call it a slump, but they, you know, weren't as effective as they were earlier in the season. Last two games, they've kind of broken out a little bit. So they'd love to keep that momentum going forward here against this Niners, you know, rush defense.
When it comes to the Eagles passing attack, what do you see? What do you forecast for Jalen Hurts in a game, by the way, that could be rainy? And Stats, who I will reference once again, was talking about concern with Brock Purdy in the rain. Apparently, he hasn't always had the best games in those situations. And the Eagles have some advantage in terms of experience playing in the rain, considering they've done it the past 2 weeks. So they kind of have, I think, potentially like a better handle on what does and what might and might not work in rainy scenarios, just based on the past couple games here. But yeah, what do you see out of like the 49ers secondary?
Yeah, in the NFC Championship game, you know, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith didn't really get going. Devontae Smith obviously had that big catch slash non-catch.
It wasn't, but guess what? It was. It counted. It counted in a way, too, where, like, they were smart about it. The Eagles were smarter. They deserved to get that have a catch because Devontae told everyone to hurry up and get the playoff, and they did. They don't have to apologize for that.
Also, the play just to make that catch
right, to make it close
was an incredible play.
Right.
So like, yeah, the Eagles don't have to feel bad about that. But they never really got going in that game because they didn't need to. So, you know, they're going to need to in this game, I would imagine. And the 49ers starting cornerbacks are Tre'Davious Ward, who in my opinion is a very good player, and Diamador Lenore, who's an acceptable number two corner, but certainly the weakness in their secondary, in my opinion. So last four games, been targeted 19 times, given up 17 receptions. That's, you know, 89.5%, 226 yards, 11. That's 11.9 yards per target. And I don't know if you'll recall this, but way back in week 2 or 3 or whenever they played them in 2021, he's the guy that they took the shot play against when they're, you know, backed up against the shadow of their end zone to Quez, where It was the 91-yard gain, and he got tackled inside the five, and then they didn't score, and they lost the game because of they didn't score on that drive, more or less. But they attacked him in that situation, and I think that was purposeful.
Yeah, Ward only allowing a 73.5 passer rating this season, according to Pro Football Reference here. I am looking up D'Amador Lenore as we speak. And then they also have Ambry Thomas in the slot, who I guess is better in the slot than he was on the outside. I remember he used to be kind of like a point of a pain point, I guess, if you call it that, for the 49ers playing on the outside in the past year. Looking at Lenore, he's actually only allowed a 82.6 pass rating this season, but as you mentioned, kind of struggling a little bit more recently and not an amazing player by any means. So, yeah, you like the Eagles matchups, I feel like, against those guys. Not that they're bad, but the Eagles receivers are very good. I think Jalen Hurts is playing at a pretty high level, at least in the second half of games. So I don't know. I just, every matchup, I'm not saying that every matchup is in the Eagles' favor, but when I think about these, a lot of these key matchups, I think I like a lot of them for the Eagles, and the ones that aren't, I don't think they're like total deal breakers for this team.
Yeah. Worth noting too. Talanoa Hufanga is out for the season with a torn ACL. He was a first team all pro safety for them a year ago. Jair Brown, rookie third round pick for them. He's now starting in place of Hufanga from Penn State. He's actually played pretty well, as far as I understand. I haven't watched him. I haven't, you know, zeroed in on him specifically too much. But as far as I understand, he's played well in Hufanga's absence. But I would imagine the Eagles will test him. As well as these corners, of course. I should note, by the way, like Lenore is kind of a squatty type, a little bulkier than Ward. He's 5'10", 200. So I think if they do match up, it would make sense for Ward to match up against Brown just because he's better. But body type-wise, I think Lenore makes some sense on Brown. So maybe they match up that way, but then just give him extra help and let Ward just man up, straight man up against Devontae and take their chances on that matchup. But it'll be interesting to see how, you know, how the 49ers defend these Eagles wide receivers. Dallas Goedert not being in this game sucks for the Eagles, because I think that frees up Fred Warner to, you know, kind of be more active in other ways. He's a bitch as a blitzer, and by that I mean he's a bitch to block as a blitzer. So if, you know, they don't have to worry about a tight end and, you know, beating them in the middle of the field, they can do more creative things with Dre Greenlaw and Warner. So that's maybe a little bit concerning. Whereas if you have Goddard, then, you know, those, you know where they're going to be. They're going to be covering Goddard. So yeah, I think that's sort of a matchup to watch as well. But I do think, as always, you know, the Eagles have matchup advantages in their favor at receiver.
Okay, let's take a break here. We'll come back, make our picks for the game. We will be back after this.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Back here on BGN Radio, Jimmy, let's get into our Week 13 NFL picks really quickly. Really quickly, because this game already happened by the time most people listen to this. Seahawks at Cowboys -9. Yeah. We're both taking the Cowboys -9, right?
I'm taking the Cowboys -9, yeah.
Okay, yeah, Cowboys probably won. And if they didn't, you're going to love hearing this and how wrong it was, so congrats. Okay, that brings us to the, and again, quickly, because these games don't matter as much, but Dolphins are 9.5-point favorites at the Commanders. It would be great if the Commanders won this, because nice to see their draft order get screwed up, but I don't think they're going to win.
No. Okay. No, I mean, they gave up 31 points to the Giants. What are they going to do against this Miami offense?
It's a fair question, but Jack Del Rio is gone, so maybe that helps. Lions 4-point favorites at the Saints, and the Saints had a big loss last week to the Falcons when it comes to the Eagles' interest of the Saints not winning the NFC South, so that was a really nice development for the Eagles. And I think the Saints will lose again to the Lions.
Yeah, the Lions scare me a little bit in terms of their pass defense. They've gotten just lit up by, a bunch of
passing against this defense?
Quarterbacks, what's that?
Who's passing for the Saints against this defense?
Well, that's exactly it. So, I'm not sure that Derek Carr and the Saints can, the Saints have good receivers, but, Derek Carr has just kind of been a disaster in New Orleans this year. So, I don't know that the Saints have it in them to take advantage, but I'm just kind of talking big picture here with the Lions. That is not a team that would scare me in any way if the Eagles had to play them in the playoffs.
Oh, famous last words. Going to get clipped on the Lions podcast out there. Pride of Detroit's going to put you on their front page. Okay. We're both taking the Lions to beat the Saints, which again would be good news for the Eagles. Eagles will want the Falcons and Bucks to win.
I will take the points on that. Am I getting four?
Yeah, you get four.
I'll take the Saints and the points.
Okay, you're getting the points, but you're taking the Lions to win out to win the game. Giants are on their bye, we should mention, just really briefly there. And then that brings us to the Eagles being 3-point underdogs.
Crazy.
Break out the dog mass at home. They're 10-1. Who do you have, Jimmy?
Yeah, they both have dangerous rushing attacks, as I mentioned. They just rely so heavily on Christian McCaffrey that the Eagles can kind of – you can't – they have other weapons, so you can't just completely key on him, but he's going to get the ball a F-ton. So, you got to make sure that you have bodies around him all game, whether it's in the run game or in the passing game. Both teams are good at stopping the run. Both teams have really good pass rushes. But the thing that I really think separates these two teams is offensive line, where the Eagles, of course, have arguably the best offensive line in the NFL. And the Niners have one star player and four guys who I believe are all below average starters. So I think these teams are really, really evenly matched across the board, except I give the Eagles a major advantage. I give the 49ers a major advantage at linebacker, but again, I give the Eagles a major advantage along their offensive line. They have the better quarterback, and in my opinion, they have the better pass rush. So give me the Eagles, and I will gladly accept the points as well, but I think the Eagles are the better team. I think they win this game.
All right. If the 49ers come into the link and kick the crap out of the Eagles, respect. Good on them. It's exactly what they should do. If anything less than that, if they come into Philly talking all this, I'll pull a Deion Sanders
disaster
here, bull junk.
Yes.
And then don't back it up. They will be the biggest effing losers of all time. Screw this team. The Eagles are going to have maybe the Eagles lose this game. Doesn't even matter. They can still potentially get the one seed. The Eagles are going to have the last laugh when it comes to this 49ers. Not even a feud. I don't even want to call it a feud because it's not even like a feud. I'm tired of hearing. I went on the 49ers podcast today. They're like, both the Eagles and the 49ers are talking. No. The Eagles are not talking. The 49ers started the talk. They're doing the talking. They literally called James Bradbury trash, which is just stupid. He was a second team all pro last year. He allowed the lowest passer rating in the league when targeted last season. He was not trash. I'm a big believer in vibes. I say that all the time, and I lean into that. And maybe that's silly, but I don't think it is. I truly believe in my heart of hearts that the 49ers are going to have to pay for – it just doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel right that they would just get to talk all that trash and things would go so easy for them. That feels too good to be true on their end. It feels like they put so much – unnecessary pressure on themselves in this game. It's so much. And by comparison, if you're the Eagles, I just think there's such a weight lifted because of that. I think if you're the Eagles, this feels like an incredible spot to be in. If you're Nick Sirianni and you're trying to, go over the talking points and everything, this couldn't have worked out better for you. All this trash talk for bulletin board material that you have, being underdogs at home by 3 points. This is catnip. This is amazing. It's Sirianni doesn't even have to do anything. He just has to show them all of that, and it's just so built in for them in terms of the pressure is not on them. All of the pressure is on the 49ers, and I just think that leads to an Eagles team that can play loose, not tight, and also just knowing obviously that the Eagles themselves can fight back from being down that has to be in the 49ers' head to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And also in the Eagles' head in terms of like being able to believe in themselves. I don't think people are giving enough possibility. Like I said, I think in the Bills recap podcast that the Eagles could just come in here and punch this team in the mouth and roll just like they did earlier this year in the NFC Championship game. I'm not saying, you know, it'll happen the same way as Brock Purdy getting knocked out, but I do think they're going to get after him. I think they're going to sack him. I think the 49ers aren't going to be able to play their game script like they usually are. And once you take that away from them, they're not the same team. They're a very good team. I have a lot of respect for the 49ers. I'm not going to talk trash about them because I think they're pretty good, very talented. But I think they don't match up well against the Eagles. And now my concerns here are that the Eagles are banged up. You know, you're missing Dallas Goedert. You're missing Zach Cunningham. You're missing Fletcher Cox. You know, maybe those things take a toll. I also look at the fact that the Eagles have, they played like a bazillion snaps against the Bills last week, so they could be tired having to have done that. Those things are definitely working against them. But man, I really just feel like that 49ers team, it all comes back to this for me. I said on the preview, I'll say it again. If you're an Eagles player and you have any sense of pride, do you let that team walk into your building and beat you? No, you do not let them do that. Or at least if they do, they're going to have to really effing earn it. It's going to be like really hard for them to win this game. So that's where I'm at with it. I felt that way the whole week. I feel like increasingly good about the game as leading up to the game. If they get Zach Ertz, I like the Eagles even more. That just seems like a great boost from a vibe perspective. Not that like he's gonna have a huge role, but he could help potentially a little bit at all, which is good, nice, potentially, if it happens. We'll see. So yeah, give me the Eagles to win this game. This is my lock of the week for the ESPN Nation NFL show. Eagles plus +3. I'll take him outright, baby. I'll tease the spread. I'll say Eagles minus -3. Screw it. The Eagles are winning this game if there's any justice in the world. And if I'm giving you like a troll score prediction, which I kind of want to do. Obviously, this isn't like realistic or going to happen. I think the possible, the most troll possible score against this opponent would be 49-0, right? Like that'd be the most disrespectful move you could do to the 49ers is beat them by their own score. I think that'd be funny. Anyway. Beep,
49-0. Okay.
Yeah, like 49-0. Like you beat the 49ers by 49-0 or win by 49 points, like a margin of 49 points. That's pretty good too. That'd be like a nice little fun. I wonder if that's ever happened. I want to. Got to look that up. In any case, not my actual prediction. I'll say the Eagles win this game by a score of, I'm going to say it's the exact same. Well, no, that's too tough. I was going to say the exact same score as the championship game. I'll just go 33-24.
Yeah, I went 27-21. I think like the unpopular opinion here is that like, I think the Eagles are just the better team. I mean, they're 10-1. They've beaten three straight quality opponents. They've proven they can win games in just a wide assortment of ways. 3-point underdogs at home. Jalen Hurts has won, you know, 10 straight games at home.
He's 26-3 in his last 29 games.
They're just a better team. I feel like it's just been kind of talked into like a fact that the 49ers are like a more talented, better team. But the Eagles just win because of intangibles and whatever, blah, 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 blah. No, the Eagles are the better team, in my opinion. So, I don't know. We'll see.
The Eagles have a coaching advantage when it comes to at least game management. That's
for sure.
A big thing I believed in the Eagles. That's a huge reason why I cited I believe the Eagles were going to beat the 49ers in the championship game last year is because when the 49ers get into 4th-and-2 or whatever, guess what Kyle Shanahan's going to do? He's going to kick a field goal. He's going to punt. He's not going to give his offense the chance. That's what he does. He's a coward.
You know what? Speaking of which, we didn't talk at all about special teams. So they have probably the best punter in the NFL. But that kicker, he missed two against.
Yeah.
I know he missed kicks against the Browns and Vikings. He missed two in one of those games and he missed one in the other. So in two of their losses, that kicker missed three kicks. And, you know, very clearly, as you've pointed out, well, I mean, Jake Elliott is clearly one of the best kickers in the NFL. You call him the best kicker in the NFL, I think, during the last podcast. But clearly, there's a big advantage that the Eagles have with their kicker over the 49ers kicker. Nick Moody is his name.
Shanahan will use him more than he probably should because he's a coward, just like Sean McVay. Well, I don't know how McDaniel is with that. I haven't followed him specifically. But for sure, Shanahan is a big-time coward. And that could be the difference in this game. It could be a difference between Shanahan not going for it in a key spot, and Nick Sirianni, you know he will, even if it's deep in the Eagles' own territory, because they have an unstoppable play that helps them with that. So I think that's another matchup that's working in Eagles' favor, is just the game. We talked about the Devontae catch that wasn't a catch. That was so dumb not to challenge it. It was so dumb by Shanahan. Yes. Like, even if it's just like you think you might not, it's a high leverage spot. Like, no one would kill you for wasting a challenge or a timeout. And like you've said in the past, are teams really ever running out of challenges?
Never. No. It doesn't happen.
Especially with the automatic review stuff now, yeah, in a lot of cases. So, but that's absolutely relevant. Maybe Shanahan has learned from that mistake. And I'm not saying the same situation will happen, but you like those little things like that, you can almost like count on something like that happening and Shanahan not maximizing it. And Sirianni, you have more faith that he will. So I think that's another edge working in the Eagles' favor. I just think, again, holistically, this Eagles team matches up well against this 49ers team. And I've posited to both RJ and Stats, and I'll now do it with you, that there might just be like a triangle thing going on in the NFC where I think the Eagles might have the 49ers number and the 49ers have the Cowboys number. And it's a little much to say the Cowboys have the Eagles number because the Cowboys lost to the Eagles. But, you know, obviously the Cowboys give the Eagles trouble.
I think that's fair. I think your point there is fair, though.
So
the Cowboys give the Eagles trouble, right? No question about it.
And I think that like that makes sense because there's different matchups. It's not the same. Yeah. It's not like transitive. It's not like, well, you beat this team, so therefore you're better than that other team that they beat. And, like, it doesn't work like that. The NFL is more matchup based. So I just like the Eagles in this game. I think they're going to win. And even if they don't, they don't need to. That's the thing. 49ers need this win a lot more than they do, which will make it more embarrassing if they can't. The Bills needed the win last week a lot more than the Eagles did, and yet the Eagles won. So we'll see. Jimmy, do you have any final thoughts?
I'm really looking forward to this. One other thing, I guess, maybe two, is it's supposed to be raining, maybe. So if it is, it'll be the third straight game that the Eagles have in the rain. I don't know if there's an advantage to be had by that. But the weather won't be bad temperature-wise. It should be like in the 50s, 40s once you get into the second half. It's actually
like
the highest
temperature like this week.
Yeah. So the weather shouldn't be, you know, too much of a factor. But I'm really looking forward to this game. Should be fun. And big juice, big time juice game, like the juiciest game of the year.
100%.
I think by a significant margin is this week. I mean, certainly Eagles Dallas is a big one a couple weeks ago, but this one feels a little different, just because there's so much hatred and there's so much talk, and the 49ers just being crybabies for the last 10 months. The Eagles having to listen to it. And again, you've said that like they've shown amazing restraint in not responding to a lot of it. So yeah, maybe we'll see that all on the field, and maybe we'll see a fight or two. Like Trent Williams is
I think it's a lock.
Is kind of like a hothead douche. So like, you know, maybe he gets baited into something, but yeah, it's clearly going to be a game played between two teams that very much do not like each other.
If the Eagles win, their chances of clinching the number one seed improve from 68% to 92% on New York Times playoff simulator. If they lose, they only go down from 68 to 54, but you know, the delta there from 92 to 54 is massive. Sure. And obviously you have the tiebreaker head to head if you beat the 49ers here. And if you do, like if you win this, I said it on the other podcast, I've said that line a lot now here. Sorry for repeating myself. But if you win this game, I mean, the Cowboys game just really doesn't, like, it just matters so much less at that. If you beat the 49ers, this Cowboys game in week 14, I'm not saying it doesn't matter at all, but it matters a lot. It's like, okay, oh no, we lost.
Well, it's another common opponent game in your favor if you beat this 49ers, because they already lost. And if you beat the Cardinals later in the year, then that's another one as well. Of course, you have to sweep the Giants, presumably, because to have the same divisional record as the Cowboys, it goes head to head, of course, then division, then common opponents. So you have to sweep the Giants, of course. And if it came down to common opponent tiebreaker, then Eagles are really set up if they win this game.
Got to beat the Seahawks too. Assuming
it's basically a two-game lead they'll have over the Cowboys, even if the Cowboys beat them the following week.
And then that's before the Cowboys.
No. I'm sorry. It would still be a one-game advantage, I guess.
But that's, you know, and that's also with the Cowboys then having to go play the Bills in Buffalo, the Dolphins in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
They had to play, they're hosting the Lions. Like they, you know, they, I know the Lions are flawed, like you said, but to assume they're winning all three of those games is, you know, that's a lot to assume. They're
right.
Definitely going to take care of it. Plus, you know, maybe they slip up against the Seahawks tonight. I don't think so, but I really hope so. That'd be great because you and I will be watching that. Or as we're recording this, we will be watching that. As you're hearing this, we will have watched that and hopefully given high fives all around to celebrate the Cowboys loss. But in any case, still will be good to get a look at both of those teams since the Eagles are playing them in upcoming weeks here. Get a, you know, firsthand look at what's coming up. But yeah, will be a great one this Sunday at the link between the Eagles and 49ers. Like you, very much looking forward to it. A lot of juice. Huge, big game. Win. Just win it. Okay, Jimmy, I think I already asked you for final thoughts. My final thought is that we got to get out of here. So check out our sponsor information in the episode description below. Wrong Crowd Beer Company, Right to Sell and Craft Jerky, Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors. Check out our social media information in the episode description as well. We would appreciate all the ratings, reviews, and whatnot. 5-star. All those good things. We appreciate you sharing your Spotify Wrapped podcast information. I saw some listeners out there who were like in the top 4% and the top 1%. That's crazy. We appreciate you. You listen to like every episode. That's insane. We love you. We really appreciate you rocking with us here at BGN Radio. So thanks for sharing that. We love you. And we hope to be seeing some of you, I guess, who were doing those things or have seen you at Wrong Crowd Beer Company on Thursday night. So we can appreciate you in person. Okay, Jimmy, you and I will be back after the Eagles beat the 49ers.
Good. Bye, everybody.
BGN.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.